This is In the Hive, a show that looks at the issues and ideas that tie the greater Salt Lake Valley together. I'm Emily Means, and today on the show we look at what the end of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, means for Utahns. In 2012, the Obama administration implemented DACA, a program allowing people who entered the country illegally as children to apply for work permits and for protection from deportation, if they met the requirements. DACA was created in response to Congress's failure to pass the DREAM Act, a bipartisan piece of legislation that was first introduced in 2001 and was originally co-sponsored by Utah Senator Orrin Hatch. The bill intended to give the same population of immigrants as is covered under DACA a path to citizenship and has been introduced multiple times in the past 16 years. On September 5th, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced on behalf of the Trump administration that DACA would be rescinded, citing the questionable constitutionality of President Obama's executive action. Here's Sessions' announcement on C-SPAN. Aliens.
The policy was implemented unilaterally to great controversy and legal concern after Congress rejected legislative proposals to extend similar benefits on numerous occasions to this same group of illegal aliens. In other words, the executive branch, through DACA, deliberately sought to achieve what the legislative branch specifically refused to authorize on multiple occasions.
Nationwide, there are nearly 800,000 DACA recipients, often referred to as Dreamers in reference to the DREAM Act. Under the Trump administration's decision, no new applicants will be protected under the program. Recipients whose DACA status expires after March 5, 2018, will lose protections and work permits as they expire. With about 10,000 DACA beneficiaries in Utah, state and local organizations, immigration activists, and politicians are weighing in on the end of the program. The University of Utah, for instance, has come out in support of all undocumented students. While Utah Senator Mike Lee sees this as an opportunity to find a congressional solution to supporting DACA recipients while also deterring illegal immigration. Today's show features some responses to the end of DACA, including the stories of three DACA beneficiaries. One group that's reacted quickly to President Trump's decision, the Mexican government. With a majority of DACA recipients originating from Mexico, Utah's Mexican consul, Jose Borjon, had this to say about their futures.
We obviously would be honored if they return to Mexico. These are youngsters who have lived, worked, studied here, had families. They're bicultural. They have a bilingual. They have studies that will benefit our country. We would be able to help them out with finding jobs and if they're studying, to get their papers into Mexican universities. But the truth is that we understand that it's not their option, because they feel as U.S. nationals, because they arrived at a very early age here. That's what they told us, and they have their families, and they just don't feel, even if they like and love Mexico and their ancestry, they just don't feel anymore as part of Mexico. So recognizing that and respecting that, we would love to see how this can be solved here in the United States for them.
In support of DACA beneficiaries, the Mexican consulate in Utah is providing legal services for Mexican nationals who are eligible to renew their DACA or are exploring other options if they don't meet those renewal requirements. I spoke with Heath Becker, an immigration attorney at the nonprofit Immigrant Legal Services in Salt Lake City, about some of the concerns he's heard from those seeking assistance from the consulate.
Right now, people are just very stressed out because it's the uncertainty. People don't know, you know, all the time, like, if they're going to qualify for something or if it's going to work. So they're worried about whether they can renew DACA. They're worried about if my DACA is going to expire and I can't renew it, what's going to happen to the house I bought, to the car I bought, because they're going to lose their work permits. What's going to happen to their jobs? Are they going to be allowed to keep working? Are they going to be deported? What do they need to do to prepare in case they are deported? You know, and a lot of the people that we see, I think there's this kind of like maybe this vision of DACA kids or just these young kids from Mexico. But, you know, a lot of them are now married to U.S. citizens, or they have U.S. citizen kids. You know, they've built their lives here. They've gone to school. They've graduated. They have degrees. They have good jobs. They're worried about losing everything.
Do you have any answers for them when they ask about their houses or their families and what will happen?
I do the best I can. You know, I tell them, you know, as long as they already have the loan, they can probably, as long as they keep making their payments, they're going to be okay. People that were looking to buy a house in the future and that are on DACA, it's going to be hard for them because it's going to be tough for them to try to get a loan if their future, you know, employment prospects are so uncertain.
DACA has existed for 5 years now, and recently and at the beginning, its legality and constitutionality has been in question. I'm wondering if you have, perhaps as a lawyer, any comments on the legality of DACA?
Well, you know, I wouldn't really say like it's illegal. I would say that really it boils down to like constitutional questions. You know, does the executive branch of the government, the president, have the authority in the Constitution to do what Obama did? You know, because under the Constitution, Congress has authority over immigration laws. And so really, I think it boils down to, did the executive branch go too far? Did they do something that only the Congress can do? But, you know, I think you could get constitutional scholars and legal scholars on both sides of the issue. Some that say that the president was within his rights and some that say that he was not.
Can you specifically say, considering all the misinformation that seems to be circulating, what does DACA actually provide for undocumented immigrants?
So, you know, DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And so deferred action really means that the government agrees to defer taking action on their deportation. So it's not a legal status. They're not here with a legal status when they get DACA. All they get is a promise from the government because they're a low priority for deportation that the government, you know, won't deport them. They'll defer their deportation for 2 years. For as long as the program existed, they could renew their DACA for another 2 years. But, you know, if they ever committed it like a serious crime or anything like that, you know, then they would be subject to deportation. The government could have always ended the program at any time, you know, like they did for everybody or for just an individual person. They could take it away and deport that person as well. Really what DACA provided was just 2 years without like the immediate threat of deportation. And it also provided them while they were waiting and they had the program, a work permit. And with that work permit, they could get a valid Social Security number. They could file their taxes with their social. They could get a job. For some people that I've met, it meant that they could get health insurance. I've met several people that had terminal illnesses and DACA would like basically save their life because with DACA, they could get a job and get health insurance, or they could, with their social, get health insurance that way, which before they couldn't be insured.
Do they qualify for any sort of benefits?
You know, they're not going to qualify for Medicaid, food stamps, you know, government benefits like that, no.
A lot of people are coming in and looking to renew their DACA status. Some of them can't. Who is unable to renew their status, and what are their options if they can't do that?
So what we know is that those whose DACA expires on or before March 5th, 2018 can renew. I just talked with a lady today here at the consulate whose sister, her DACA expires just after March 5th. She cannot renew. So to be able to renew their DACA, it has to expire March 5th or before. Obviously, they had to have continued to maintain like a clean record. They can't have committed crimes. But yeah, so it's those whose DACA expires within the next 6 months that are going to be able to renew.
Do they have any sort of options other than potentially being open to deportation?
You know, there's a percentage of people with DACA that could qualify for a better or a different immigration benefit. So some of them are married to U.S. citizens, and so they can try to apply for their permanent residency that way. Some might have U.S. citizen children, and once the children turn 21, they may be able to get their papers that way. Those that have been the victims of violent crimes, you know, there's a immigration program for them. So, you know, it's a small percentage, but there is a percentage of people with DACA that might be able to get, you know, the residency or qualify for a different immigration program.
Do you have any parting legal advice for some of these people?
Yes, absolutely. So if your DACA is going to expire March 5th or sooner, they have until October 5th. Immigration has to receive the application October 5th or sooner to renew DACA. If they don't have funds, if they can't afford to renew, you know, they should, because right now immigration attorneys from my office and also lots of other immigration attorneys in Utah are offering to do the legal work for free. If they're from Mexico and they can't afford the $495 the government charges, the Mexican consulate in Salt Lake has graciously offered to pay the $495 government fee. Also, you know, there's other nonprofits and community groups for people that aren't from Mexico that have offered to provide financial assistance to for the government fees. So my advice is, if your DACA is expiring, to go ahead and renew. Don't let lack of money prevent them from renewing, because a lawyer, we can do it for free. We can help them find financial assistance for the government fee. But they need to act quickly. They only have until October 5th to file their application.
That was Heath Becker, an immigration attorney with Immigrant Legal Services in Salt Lake City. Given the uncertainty of their status in the United States going forward, some DACA recipients are understandably hesitant to speak publicly about their lives in America. After connecting with local advocacy organizations, I was able to sit down with three DACA beneficiaries. They shared their experiences before and after DACA was implemented, and what they hope happens for them and other undocumented immigrants in the future.
My name is Pablo Arcia. I am 29 years old, and I am a software developer. My country of origin is Mexico, and I was 7 years old, and I came in 1996. My parents brought me to America to have a better future. We lived in hard times in Mexico, and another reason why we came is because of violence. My dad got mugged a few times at gunpoint, and one of my sisters was almost kidnapped, so that's when my family decided, like, this is it. At least my parents thought that we would be safer here in America. Yeah. So my life before DACA was, actually wrote a blog post about this. It wasn't a very happy one. I had a lot of fear. I had a lot of anger because of my inability to progress. Like, I had people that I'd grown up with, you know, that had families and were fulfilling their careers, you know, doing what they wanted to do with their lives. And I was here stuck, you know, at home, not being able to find constant regular jobs, things like that. So I was very frustrated, very angry. It was very depressing. Before DACA, I mean, I did what I had to do, you know, to find a job. You know, I worked at restaurants, I worked a little bit construction, you know, whatever would help me pay bills and help my family. Oh man, DACA changed my life. When I received DACA, I wasn't able, unfortunately, to attend school just because of the way residency works with schools. It's kind of weird. So I mean, at first I got a job. I was able to get a good job, a steady job that I could count on. And then after I had a job for a few years, one of my cousins, my cousin's husband, he suggested that I should study programming on my own. So I did, and I enjoyed it a lot. It became like a substitute for video games. It became like my passion. So I started doing it, and eventually I landed a job at a startup here. And I mean, the rest is history. Like, I've been able to, like, just grow in my positions and my income. I was able to buy a house. I'm able to take care of my family. So that's what DACA did for me. I don't think I would be able to be where I am today without DACA. Everything would have been in my way. Like, without a social security number, you don't have anything in this country, right? Like, you can't get a meaningful loan for a house. You can't even apply for a house. Yeah, like, I'd be stuck at home with my parents, you know, trying to find a job somewhere that could pay bills. When DACA got rescinded last week, we actually had a discussion. It's mostly over text. They're disappointed, right? That we've been able to grow, and like, not only me, like, my sisters all have, you know, steady jobs. They all have, well, most of them have bought homes and things like that. So like, with DACA being removed, like, all of the progress that we've been made has halted, right? Like, we feel like, you know, we might not last here for long. We may need to, if it comes to that, we may need to go somewhere else and start over. So it's kind of scary. If it did come to that, we had to leave, well, if that we can renew our DACA or get any legal status, we've thrown around a few ideas. We've thrown around, you know, going back to Mexico, starting back there. I mean, yeah, mostly that's what we've thought about, just, you know, having to go back to Mexico and then start there, or potentially look somewhere else to start a life. So I'm not too worried about it, actually. I mean, we've done it once before, right? Like, when we came here to the United States, it was hard to get acclimated to the new culture, to new people, to new customs and things like that. But we did it once. Like, we feel like if it came down to it, like, we could do it. And it'd be tough, it'd be hard, but in the end, we'd be able to come out on top. So the ideal outcome of this is, you know, Congress gets their act together and helps, you know, not only Dreamers, but everybody that has been here and doesn't have a criminal past and, you know, has been a good citizen, quote unquote, of America. They should have the opportunity to progress and to become more. And I mean, that's what I hope happens. I don't have a lot of hope in Congress right now. Unfortunately, in past years, they haven't shown that they care a lot about us and that their actions speak louder than their words. They can say all they want about Dreamers and DACA and all that stuff, but unless something happens and action, you know, they start doing something, I don't have much hope. I think the biggest misconception is that we're all criminals. I mean, yeah, some of us had to break a law to come to this country, but it was for survival. We had to do something to get out of the toxic place where we were. And yeah, I mean, could we have done it a different way? Yeah, we could have, right? Like it probably would have taken longer, but it could have been done. But that's not what we're fighting now. Now is like, what can we do now? What can we do going forward?
My name is Siria Calvarez. I am 22 years old, and I work in community affairs, community engagement, empowering my Latino and Latina community. I came to the United States when I was 5 years old. I immigrated here from Cuernavaca, Morelos, Mexico. My parents and I immigrated to the United States because they knew that a better future lied ahead here in the U.S. than it did in Mexico. So they sacrificed their livelihoods there. And because there wasn't a lot of opportunities for families like mine, we decided that we were better together as a family here in the U.S. than separated between two countries. I received DACA when I was 18 or 17 years old, I forgot which one, but I was graduating high school, so I didn't really understand a lot of what it meant not to have DACA most of my life because I didn't work a job until after I graduated from high school. However, I did have one difference that made a huge difference in my life was a driver's license, which is people take that for granted. However, when I first got my driver's license, it was a privilege card when I was undocumented, and it was when I was 16, and I remember not wanting to show anyone. And someone saw it one time, and they're like, why is yours red? Why does yours have a huge privilege sign? And I didn't know how to explain it to them that I was undocumented. However, when I finally was able to get my DACA when I was a senior in high school, my license looked like everybody else, and it felt, you know, like I was just like everybody else. My whole life I've felt American, and I felt like I am a part of Utah and this country. So having that even small difference of a license really did make a huge difference in my life and feeling that I belonged. When I received DACA, like I said, I was a senior in high school. So right after high school, I was able to start my first job, and I was able to save up for college because undocumented students can't qualify for federal aid, Pell Grants, student loans that are, you know, federally funded. So I was having to fund my own education. So because of DACA, I was able to work the whole summer, save up for my tuition, and then move on in my career. I worked from a research lab to an office assistant, and then I mentored college students and high school students, and I was able to do an internship in Washington, D.C. because of DACA, because I was able to have that worker's permit and work legally, and just recently I graduated from the University of Utah. So because of DACA, I was able to move forward in my life because I was able to work. I was able to have opportunities that I didn't have without DACA. The biggest stereotype is more misconceptions that they have of what undocumented immigrants can or can't have, can't or can't do. And I think the fact that we pay taxes, the fact that we add to Social Security and don't see any of it, I think the fact that immigrants are less likely to commit crimes, both undocumented and documented immigrants. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions because of the way they see immigrants. They don't see us as part of their communities, but they see us as an other, you know, a different group of people, but we're actually a big part of their community. Immigrants are more likely to create businesses. We're more likely to do a lot of good things in our community, yet we are only seen for the, like, a couple of bad people who may commit crimes. However, we're less likely to commit crimes. So I think the hardest thing for me is being able to tell people that, but I think it's even harder for them to really accept it, accept the fact that we aren't criminals. And even if we are, right, we still deserve dignity and respect. I definitely always talk to my parents about DACA, about it going away, because President Trump explicitly has said over and over again from his beginnings of his campaign up until now that he was going to rescind the program. So it came to no surprise to our immigrant community that the program ended. He said it from the beginning of his campaign. It was one of his promises. And the fact that people didn't believe him is astonishing to me, because we have heard it time and time again, his anti-immigrant rhetoric. And so my parents and I have talked about this. And I think one of the biggest things that I've learned from them is their strength and their willingness to move forward, despite not having documentation and despite knowing that there might not be something for us, right, if DACA is taken away. So yes, I worry, and yes, I'm pretty disheartened that the DACA program is going to end. However, I am hopeful, and hopeful because of them, and they've taught me faith, you know, in God, that things will get better, and that despite, you know, the obstacles that we face, better things are to come to us. And so while it is hard, it is difficult, I find strength in my parents and 11 million, right, other undocumented immigrants who have faced this reality without DACA for the past who knows how many years. So while it is difficult, I know we can move forward. I am hopeful, right? I want to be hopeful that something can pass, that we can put enough pressure on congressmen, even congressmen like ours here in Utah that are Republican, from Senator Hatch to Senator Lee to even Representative Chris Stewart, who has talked about DACA and who want to pursue a bipartisan approach to this issue. However, I don't know. I can't say that it's going to happen, because we've been saying this since 2001, right? The DREAM Act has been in Congress, out of Congress for the past 17, 16 years. So while I want to be hopeful, I'm also very skeptical whether we can actually pass something or not. But because of the six-month deadline, I do hope that something does happen, not because of me, because my DACA doesn't expire until 2 years from now, but because of the people around me whose DACA expires in June, August, September, May.
My name is Humberto Neri. My friends call me Beto. I am 22 years old. I work at the Brio at City Creek. I was born in Mexico, a place called Ciudad Delicias, Chihuahua. It's more on the north side of Mexico. I came here around the year between 99 and 2000. I was about 5 years old when my parents told me that, my mom told me that we were moving. My mom brought us over here because my dad was living over here, and he was out here working and sending us money while we were in Mexico. It was me, my mom, my sister, and my two older brothers. I'm the youngest of them all. So when we came over here, they just wanted us to come over here so we can be with my dad, and he had saved up enough money to be able to afford a place out here, I guess. I came to the U.S. when I was 5, so the DACA really came to me when I was about 16, 17 years old. Before that, I felt pretty regular, you know, I felt like I was just another kid in America. So yeah, I did apply for a job before, but it was kind of a low-key job. I was working with my mom at a restaurant as a busser, you know, something small where I was mostly working off tips. Yeah, I started that when I was 14 years old. I've been working pretty much ever since, and I've always been at that same place. I felt like I could achieve more after I finally got it. I'd been working at little kind of small diners where, you know, the money isn't the best, but, you know, it's something to just get by, to put me through school and do all that good stuff. And so when I finally got DACA, I decided that I was gonna look for a different kind of job. I went and worked at Wells Fargo at a bank, and I liked it, it was all right, but then, you know, I kind of just got tired of it. I just felt like there was so many problems that people were having financially that, you know, I didn't want to focus on that. So I went and looked for another job that I kind of knew, and it's like more like sales. And I went through a couple sales jobs, and then finally ended up back at a restaurant serving and bartending, because something about it. Just enjoy it.
Have you really talked to your mom and your siblings about kind of what's going on and if you have a plan going forward, if you even need a plan since Trump has rescinded DACA?
You know, the day after it was announced, I woke up and my mom was home. We did talk about it. She told me what was going on. I looked it up and researched it, so it was happening. I mean, right now we're kind of at a standstill. We're still, you know, very hopeful and like that, you know, something even better might come, or if something else does come and we have the opportunity to apply for another kind of permit or anything like that, we will do so, even if it's more expensive or whatever, because I just feel like I've made my life here. I feel like I grew up here, and I feel like I remember a lot more about the U.S. than I do in Mexico, you know, it was vivid memories back then. I figure even if I do only have 2 years left, because I did just renew mine, if I do have 2 years left, I decide I'm going to do the most that I can while I'm here and maybe just go back to school and focus on working and making money to have some kind of future if I ever do go back to Mexico or something like that. There's a lot of like nostalgia that I was feeling, because you think about it and you're like, I came to the U.S. when I was 5 years old. When I was coming over here, I didn't know what I was doing. My parents didn't tell me we were doing something illegal. Like, all I knew that was we were looking for a better life. So I just kind of followed along through that. And in doing so, I think that like a lot of dreamers are here. They grew up here. They know the U.S. They feel almost to be a part of this country. Like, you know, you feel a lot of pride being here. If we're really trying to help those people, trying to help the people that, you know, came here without choice, came here with just hopes of becoming something better, like, I feel like we need to find a different kind of program. Like, I feel like us being DACA recipients, we're willing to comply with anything at this point, whether we get residency, citizenship, like anything, just anything, whether it's permanent, temporary. I mean, we're not here to cause any harm. We're not here to do anything bad. We're here to work and go to school. And really, I mean, I feel like that's us wanting to help this country improve, and we want to become, you know, just anything that'll help other people, that'll help ourselves, that'll help our family that brought us here to work hard, you know?
Where do you stand on the end of the DACA program? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of this program on our website, kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.